Welcome to Inside Jag Nation, a weekly podcast that gives you an in-depth look at the South Alabama Jaguars. You can find a new podcast uploaded weekly online at usajaguars.com or take the podcast with you on your smartphone by subscribing for free on iTunes. Just search South Alabama Jaguars.
Welcome to Inside Jag Nation, the weekly podcast of the University of South Alabama Department of Athletics. This week, with the university on spring break, we are visiting with Associate Athletic Director for Facility Management, Hal Williams. Hal, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Brian.
In describing that title, which is fairly specific now, but it's evolved over the years with all the different roles you've had. The first thing I want to ask you to do for us is describe currently kind of a typical day for you, because if anyone that works with you or has to deal with you knows that you can be found anywhere on campus at any given time. Try and walk us through a day.
Well, it depends on the activities that we have that week and the schedule as far as whether we have anything from the facility improvement standpoint. But basically, you know, what I try to do when I get here first thing in the morning is just take a quick run through and put my eyes on each of our athletic facilities. I either with a car, or I have everybody who knows me sees me on campus in a little golf cart. Makes it a lot easier on these old bones. So I try to make an effort to put my eyes on every single one of our facilities and make sure that those that have responsibilities, whether it be from the ground standpoint or maintenance standpoint or things of that nature, have left our facilities the way they should be. They're clean. That the folks have come by, if we've had an event, they've cleaned the stadium, and that we look like the expectations that we all have that our facilities will look. So that's number one. And then administratively, I do have some other things, the organization of different things, and I'll spend some time in the office in the morning, answering emails, looking at things of that nature. And then the afternoon just depends. If we have an athletic event, obviously I'm in charge of athletic operations for all sporting events, and I'll make sure that the facilities are prepared, we're ready to go, and timelines, things of that nature, Brian. So it just depends.
So you lead me into my next question. On an event day, and I mean just for the purposes of our listeners, whether you talk about, for example, Tuesday's baseball game against Southeastern Louisiana, or go back a couple weeks to the last week of the basketball regular season and we got doubleheaders at the Mitchell Center. Talk through that timeline. When do you show up at the venue? Who do you deal with leading into it until game time? Because until game time, when the show is on, you know, there's a lot of responsibility that falls under you in the planning and preparation.
Well, we have a responsibility as event managers for all of our events to provide to the visiting team the game timeline. Specifically, when the court's available, you know, you mentioned basketball, when the court's available for warm-up or when batting practice, when they're scheduled for batting practice, we have to provide that in advance. We also provide vehicle information for their team, where they come into the facility, where they're to park their buses, where their locker rooms are. That's all done in advance. And then on game day, I work closely with the operations folks for both basketball and baseball. They are my hands-on people when the teams get here, but that information's already been sent. Between myself and John Singletary, depending on the sport, we will meet the officials, the game officials, the referees or whatever. We'll brief them on anything for that game that is specific, whether we have a weather situation or facility or equipment problem, anything of that nature. We go over all of that, go over the timeline, and then for the most part, it's time to get going for the game, you know?
So there's a lot going on in your world, and this might not be an easy question to answer, but when you look at all those different responsibilities, what stands out? What I mean, sounds like it could be a bear. What's an enjoyable aspect of the job? What do you like the most about working at South Alabama on a day-to-day basis?
Well, obviously, I like the games. And I as much as being a former coach and being an administrator, I'm a fan. And I have quite a bit of time invested in this university, almost three decades. And these teams mean a lot to me, and it doesn't make any difference whether it's a tennis match, golf, volleyball, soccer, all the same. I want to see us do well. I want to see our athletes excel. I want to see our coaches win. I want to see championships. So as much as anything else, I'm a fan, and I still enjoy it. Some people say, well, gosh, you're at every game. Well, yeah, I mean, I am. And I enjoy it. I could pass those responsibilities on, but I don't want to. I enjoy every minute of it.
I know you speak for a lot of people when you say that. I think people don't realize that sometimes behind the scenes what goes into it, and that's part of what makes it a pleasure to do it. If you had to pinpoint an area or two that, like, you'd say, boy, this is the hardest part of the job, what's the biggest challenge you face on a regular basis?
I think scheduling and dealing with some of the bureaucracy and some of the red tape that a state institution has in dealing with some of the routine things that you would think that would be very easy to get done sometimes are the most complicated, and it's just the way it is. It's a state school. We have rules and regulations, and regarding vendors and regarding ordering and purchasing and things of that nature, and it can get a little frustrating at times.
So you've said, you've acknowledged you've been here for around 30 years. You officially came to South in 1988. You've had a variety of roles. You've been the men's golf coach. You've worked in compliance. You've worked in student life. Talk about the different roles you've had here and kind of how you moved from one to the other and how that's gone. Because certainly it's had to have kept things interesting for you.
Well, I want to thank Joe Godfrey for giving me the opportunity, obviously, to come to work at my alma mater. But when I first arrived, I was hired specifically as the men's golf coach. And slash, and there were some slashes. There was slash compliance officer, slash academic advisor, slash event coordinator, and whatever else that needed to be done on that particular day. So my days were long. I had a lot of responsibilities, most of which kind of overlapped a little bit, but it became difficult as the years went along to do justice to two areas that that needed specific attention. First was the men's golf team. We were very successful, but in order to stay successful, I needed to be on the road more, recruiting and things of that nature, which is directly contrary to the other one, which is compliance. As we unfortunately, had a major violation during that time in our men's basketball program that fortunately we were able to manage through the Committee on Infractions without doing terrible damage to our program. But it brought to light that we needed to separate those jobs and do those things. And at that point, it was my decision, and Mr. Garford's and my decision, that I would step away from the men's golf program because it would have been much, much easier to find someone. There were some qualified people out there, and luckily we were able to hire Greg Jones, who's done a great job, did a great job for us, than it would be to hire and find an experienced compliance officer at that time. So that was how that decision was made. At the same time, I was removed from the responsibilities involving the academic advisors, and basically it reduced down to compliance and event management. As we progressed again, and when it became clear that we were starting football, Mr. Godfrey gave me the choice when it gets right down to it, whether I wanted to remain in compliance or move strictly into event management and facilities. And that was when I made that choice. And I'm happy that I made that choice. And that's kind of where that evolved. So
I had it marked down to ask you later, but since you brought it up, and I do want to ask, you're one of the few people that has perspective on how far South Alabama athletics has come. Considering all the slashes you had at one time, and now to know that all those departments are manned and funded appropriately, talk about how you've witnessed and helped in that growth and what it means to you to be a part of something that's gotten so much bigger.
Well, it's incredible, the changes that not just the department but the university, and a lot of credit goes to a lot of different people, but we just simply, you know, we had a very small staff, and we managed 14 Division I or 15 Division I programs, and it was very difficult. Many of our programs were not fully funded. Many of our programs were not fully staffed during those years. We simply just didn't have the resources to do it. And the game changer for South Alabama was football. And you know, up until that, you know, we grew some. We had some changes. But the game changer was football, and it's such a encompassing. So you know, Brian, yourself, because you're involved with it. It involves so many things and so many different moving parts that we had to expand the staff. We had to do it. We had to find a way to fund it. That and I go back. I referred earlier to an infractions case that we had. The NCAA was fairly clear when we had that we needed to expand that area, that it was one that could not be a person that is pulled in another direction, that they had to be solely responsible for that. And that's where we were able to hire a young man who has grown into one of our senior administrators, and Daniel McCarthy. Very fortunate to grab him away from Mercer when we did. My point is that the necessity to deal with the growth of the program and the growth of as we added football is what was the game changer for us.
So going back now, we mentioned you came here in 88, and it was primarily or initially for the men's golf head coaching position. You'd been at McGill-Toulon the 5 to 6 years prior to that, 4 years, my mistake, as both coaching basketball and golf. And do you remember making the move from the high school level to college as a coach? And what was your interest in that time in making the move up?
Well, when I left Cumberland and I went to McGill, my intention was not to stay in high school. I didn't have any intent of staying in high school. And I had some opportunities while I was at McGill, and I had some opportunities in the first couple of years, but the timing just wasn't right. I had some chances to go be an assistant coach at a couple of different Division I basketball institutions with folks who I had established relationships. And the timing just wasn't right, whether it be, you know, I have four sons, whether it be the birth of one of those sons or whether it be something involving, you know, my wife was still finishing school and those things were more important to me, and so I chose to stay where I was. And then when this opportunity came, the timing was right, and it was good timing for me to get back into college. I always wanted to do it, and wanted to get back to it. And Mr. Godfrey called and gave me this opportunity, and I saw it as a chance to get full-time into administration, and that's really what I wanted to do the whole time.
So you brought up Cumberland Junior College, and that was your first job after you earned your degree from South, and you started there. You started the women's basketball program, and then later on, you moved to men's basketball and became the athletic director. Was that move to AD at that school at that time because you were pursuing administration, or was it one of those, well, your school staff is small and the role opened up and here comes Hal to the rescue?
Yeah, no, there was the head basketball coach was always the AD there, and it is a little bit ironic, and it's funny, we saw Coastal Carolina in the conference tournament, and I had not seen Coach Ellis for quite a few years, and Coach Ellis came to South Alabama from Cumberland Junior College, and I was here as his team trainer in the last year of gaining my degree, and I was the only holdover from the previous group of when Coach Taylor and all those guys left. And I was with Cliff his first year here, and he and I laugh about some of the funny stories of him coming from junior college and the change, and me as his trainer and guy kind of helping him through Division One, so it was funny. He and I laughed a good bit and spent a lot of time together at the tournament. But my point is that it just, you know, when I went back, Cliff helped me get the job at Cumberland, and they were starting a women's basketball program for the first time, and I had never even thought about coaching young ladies. But we were fortunate that the state championship team in Tennessee and a team that got beat in the state semifinals in women's basketball were both in the county, and one was in the city of Lebanon where Cumberland was. And I was able to convince five young women who played for those two schools to stay at home. And these girls were all Division I players. Matter of fact, one of them was the most valuable player in the state high school tournament. And the newness of the program, we were able to convince some good ones, and so we were able to jumpstart the program. First game that I ever coached was against Roan State Community College, and many people will know Andy Landers, who went on as a Hall of Famer at the University of Georgia, was their coach. They were number one team in the nation, and they came into Lebanon, Tennessee, and the first game that we ever played a game, and we beat them. And so people are going, all right, this is going to be – and I think we went 10-15 or something the rest of the year. But that was the highlight of my women's coaching career. And then Mickey Englert was our men's coach, who's a former assistant here. He left the 2 years later to go to St. Louis. I was also the men's assistant, as well as being the women's head coach. And so I transitioned into the men's job and at the same time assumed the athletic directorship.
If you had known where Andy Landers would end up and how that season, you might have just walked out of the gym after game one and said, thank you, good night, I'm out.
It was an incredible night. That's all I can tell you. The little gym that we played in those years, I can't describe it. It was built in 1935 by WPA labor. It was just awful. And Rome State's gym was this beautiful, sparkling place. And I think we sort of knocked them down a lick when they walk in and saw where they're going to play this game. So anyway, it was fun. Andy and I still talk about that game.
Now, I know it's a long time between the late 70s and the, you know, where we're at now, but talk about the difference of coaching working at the junior college level versus the Division One level.
Yeah, well, we did everything. You know, it was kind of like the guy who's the same baseball coach at Cumberland now is a guy named Woody Hunt, and we hired Woody, we did everything. We put the fences up. We cut the grass. I mean, there were five of us. There was the women's basketball coach, myself as the men's coach, and the baseball coach. I also coached the tennis team and the women's coach. You know, so we only had a few sports, and all of which were very successful. But it was a family atmosphere. We all lived on the campus. We all ate our dinners with our families in the cafeteria with our student athletes, and it was a unique time. But it was just, we did everything. I mean, I drove the bus, much like probably a large high school, but it's just the way it was, and it was family. I still am very close to those youngsters who I coached in junior college. I've gone back to several Hall of Fame induction ceremonies and things of that nature, and I really valued that time that I was there. I learned a lot. That's where, you know, after when we were married, my wife and I, our first 4 years that we were married, we were there, and our first son, Kevin, was born there, and we have some fond memories of there. We really do.
And now, you know, it was kind of extenuating circumstances that led you to come back to Mobile, and we were talking about it a little bit before recording, but if you don't mind, I mean, I just think it's interesting that what was presented to you and kind of the risk that you took in coming back before you found that job at McGill Toolin.
Well, let me preface this by saying my men's team that year had only lost one starter as a sophomore. And I had 76 – we were fortunate to have 76 players during the years that I was there that signed with Division I schools. So we had a lot of talent. We were 25-6, men's team was, got beat in the finals of the regional, and the team that won our regional goes to the national championship. Our women's team – which was coached then by Bud Childers, who later went on to coach Louisville and some other places, had all freshmen. And they were the national junior college runner-up, got beat in the championship game by Northwest Mississippi. Our baseball team was the regular season number one team in the nation, got beat in the junior college World Series. And we had most of those players coming back. So we were at a high point in our program. The university's board of trustees decided that the junior college was going to transition back to four-year status. For those who remember, if you've heard of the Cumberland Law School, well, that's where it came. That's where it originated before it moved to Birmingham. So Cumberland, for years and years and years, was a private four-year school. Cordell Hull, the original administrators and legislators, Secretary of State, was a graduate from there, and many others. And the president called me in the 1st of June and informed me that the school was going to transition back to four-year status. And I said, great, I'll start the process of moving into NAI. And he said, and oh, by the way, we need to try to come up with about $500,000 for expansion of the library and some additional faculty we need to hire. So beginning next fall, we're going to go non-scholarship in athletics. And I said, pardon me, sir. So we had all of these wonderful athletes coming back and kids that we had signed and the success. And I had the dubious problem of having to deal with the fact that this university was going to be a non-scholarship situation. Luckily, we were able to place many of those youngsters into situations, and they went on, some stayed, worked it out with financial aid and things of that nature. But at that point, I kind of pondered my future, and I felt like that it was not in my best interest to remain in that situation. And so my oldest son, who's now 36 years old, was 22 months old, and my second son was 6 months old, and I put my wife in a car, and I said, take off back to Mobile, and my mother's waiting for you at our house, and I loaded about our little three-room apartment up in the back of a truck, and I left and came back to Mobile without a job. So it was an interesting time frame.
Well, visiting this week on Inside JAG Nation with Hal Williams, Associate Athletic Director for Facility Management, you said your mom was back in Mobile. You're born and raised here, went to Murphy High School. When you were a kid, what sports did you play? What was your favorite? And it's going to lead me into kind of your educational path, but as you got into Murphy, what were your interests in sports growing up?
Well, you know, I played a lot of baseball. Obviously, everyone did in that time frame. You know, we, instead of playing video games, were non-existent, and so we'd grab up a baseball and a bat, and we had a field, and we'd go play baseball. And wooden bats, if they broke, we'd nail them back together, and so it was just the way it was. I lost my father when I was 11 years old, so my mother and my sister, my mother had raised us, you know, by ourselves, and so we had to do things a little differently. And but I did play a lot of baseball all the way up through. Had a great distinction of going with a team from Mobile to the Babe Ruth World Series and hit a home run there. It was a very exciting time for us. We didn't win it, but we came close. When I got to high school, I'd played football also. When I got to high school, I had developed speed. I was very fast, and so I concentrated solely on football and track. I felt like it was in my best interest to keep my speed going, and was fortunate to win the state indoor 60 and 50 a couple of times during my tenure there, and had a state record for a short period of time in the indoor sprints. I was very quick at the start. Those first 50, 60 yards, I was faster than most of them, but when it came to when I had to go the other 40 for the 100-yard dash or the 100-meter dash, I wasn't as fast as the other guy. I never figured that out. But anyway, it was primarily just track and football in high school, and it was to prepare myself to go play college football, which I was fortunate and able to do.
So that was the plan all along. You knew that the scholarship playing football was going to be the best route for you. You started at the Citadel.
I did.
Why did you decide to go there, and who else was recruiting you?
Well, I had several people recruiting me, and Ole Miss, Southern Mississippi. I had some sniffs from Alabama, Mississippi State, but. When I came out of high school, the NCAA rules were such that your ACT and your GPA, there were no set limits on that. You just had to be admissible at the school you were going to, but you had to be in the upper 50% of your class. Well, I had good grades. I mean, if it was my sons, I'd beat him in the head, you know, and say, you can do better. But anyway, but I'd scored very well on the ACT. But I was at the end of fall semester, when it was time to sign in February, I was three slots below the 50% mark in my class. But now let me say this. My graduating class at Murphy High School had 1,300 people in it. So it was enormous. We only had three grades, and we had almost 4,000 people on that campus. But I was three spots below the 50% mark, and the only school that stuck and stayed and waited until I graduated in May was the Citadel. The rest of them, all, including all of the schools that I mentioned, all tried to push me to junior college and go to junior college for a year, or Alabama wanted me to go to Marion Institute for a year and then come in, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't afford to do it. The only way that I was going to be able to go to college was on a full scholarship. There was no other way. And there were some local folks here that had told the Citadel about me, and they were straightforward and honest in the recruitment, and that's where I ended up, and I cherish the time that I was there. I wish that the injury had not come and I could have completed my career there, but you know, things happen for a reason, I'm sure.
And that led you to transfer back to South, where you got your degree in education, and you'd worked as a student trainer. You talked about it. You were with Coach Ellis. When you transfer back, at that point, did you know after the injury, okay, I know I want to get into coaching administration, or is that something you figured out beyond?
No, actually, my first injury, I really initially did not have plans to transfer. I was going to try to, you know, rehab. But you got to remember now, this is 1971, and the medical, you know, the way they went about things, I spent 6 months with a hard cast over my leg. I mean, a plaster hard cast. And then I spent another 4 months with a plaster tube cast, and it was going to be it was very difficult to come back from the surgery that I had just simple ACL surgery that these guys now are back in 9 months and they're running just as fast or faster there. But back then it just wasn't that way. And my coach, who was Red Parker at that time, said, listen, he said, you're probably going to lose a step or two of your speed. He said, so, and I knew I was going to miss the next year. And he said, so what we want to do is get you in and bulk you up and make you a tight end. And I knew immediately that was not something that I wanted to do. The rehab was going fine, but I was having some difficulty, and I knew that I was not going to be able to play. What actually pushed me back home was my dear sweet mother was diagnosed with cancer, the first of three cancers that she was diagnosed with, and she beat all of them. But it was time for me to come home and to take care of my mother. And so that's what led me back here. So I walked away from a full scholarship and came in here, and I was just blessed that Coach Englert, who was on the staff here at South Alabama with Coach Taylor, I'd known him for a long time through baseball, and he was able to get me on as a student trainer, and that was originally what I wanted to do. My plan was to go into athletic training or either physical therapy, something of that nature. And then the coaching side of it, as the more I got around it, the more I learned, the more I liked it, the more I became involved in it. And so it just sort of transitioned into it.
So we talked about the sports that you did play growing up, but one of them that you didn't mention is golf. Yeah. And that's what you ended up coaching in. Yeah. When did you start playing, and where did that interest come from?
My dad was a professional golfer. It's interesting, my dad's history. My father was in the Doolittle Squadron, and flew B-25s in World War II. Didn't actually went over to right after they bombed Tokyo, the Doolittle Raid. Most have seen Pearl Harbor with those planes. But anyway, my father flew those airplanes in the war. And prior to when he came back, he was a professional golfer. And he was a very accomplished professional golfer. And but there was no money. And he met my mother my mother worked in one of the relief deals for the soldiers when they came home. That's where he met my mother in Biloxi. And when they got married, and he had a way to support his family, and professional golf was not a way to support the family. So he introduced me to golf before he got sick and died, and taught me a lot about the game. But I just was so tied up in other sports that golf was expensive. When after my dad passed away and it was just my mom and us, it was an expensive sport even back then. And I just couldn't afford to go and play. I mean, I'd go and hit balls and do things of that nature, but the other things just took precedent because of the things that I was able to do.
So. Now, granted, we could extend this podcast for probably another 2 hours if we talked about all the great stories over the years that you've been part of and come across. But there's one I want to bring up. We've talked about it in the past, and it goes back to your time as men's golf coach at South. You were, who knows how close to perhaps putting together one of arguably the best teams of any sport,
yeah,
at South Alabama. You recruited Heath Slocum and brought him in, and there were almost two other future PGA professional players. Talk about that time and recruiting and that story, because you came close to having what would have been an unbelievable team here.
Well, Heath, as those most know, was from Milton, Florida, and on the same high school golf team was Boo Weekly Bubba Watson. And they're all best of friends. And when we signed Heath, Boo, I felt strongly that we were going to get Boo. And Boo got caught up on a technicality in the NCAA rules and had to go to junior college. Well, Boo was just a big guy in high school. He could hit it 8 miles, but he was not the polished golfer. But he goes to junior college, and he goes to Central Alabama, and they have a great program. And he just exploded into this monster. And the same thing with Bubba Watson. Bubba was a great player, but it was just the whole deal of the time. We just couldn't get it together. We were very close to having Heath Slocum, Boo Weekly, and Bubba Watson all on the same golf team.
I am sure that you've had a great career in all aspects, and there probably aren't very many regrets. But boy, do you ever wonder what would have happened if you'd put that team out there for 1 or 2 years?
We'd probably have a big trophy in here somewhere, I can assure you. But, you know, I tell you, Brian, one of the things that was interesting about coaching golf was the relationship with Heath Slocum. And I'll say that because I had the pleasure of recruiting him. And our game was – and I can say this because it's – I knew Heath's dad, Jack Slocum, played in pro-ams with him. He was a local PGA club pro and good player himself, and got very close with him. And then – Jack and his wife had gone through a divorce, and Jack lived in Baton Rouge, and his wife lived in Milton. Heath lived with his mom. So anyway, make a long story short, it got down to us in Florida State, and we had Heath. It's the only golfer since I've coached and that we offered a full scholarship to. He was just that good, and Florida State. Heath qualified as a NCAA qualifier academically, but his ACT score was you know, good, but it wasn't great. And Florida State, during those years, had what they called special admits. But they were not allocated per sport. They were allocated to the athletic department. It was up to the athletic director or someone in the athletic department to decide who gets the different special admits, because there's just X number. And so it came down to it, and Heath was going to have to come in Florida State on a special admit, which was not – and he was fine academically, but he still was going to have to be admitted to Florida State on a special admit status. And Florida State wouldn't allocate a special admit to men's golf, and Heath Slocum falls in our lap and is our All-American for 4 years. And I think probably that's a regret that they had on their side too, because he was special from the time he walked on the campus. Won the first tournament he ever played in. And even as a freshman, we had a senior team and a junior team, and those guys learned things from Heath, watching him and the way he prepared. That's what separated Heath Slocum, the way he prepared the tournaments, and the way he went about his business. Heath was one of those guys that you see that instead of hitting a bang in a driver and seeing how far he can hit it, he's more concerned about what the distance is for his approach shot to the greens. And he planned every tournament, every course we played, he planned it in advance. And we, our players later on, I mean, they saw how successful he is and started to adapt some of that. And it really led to some of the success that we had. A lot of that's due to Heath Slocum.
Visiting this week on Inside Jag Nation with Hal Williams, currently the Associate AD for Facility Management, but has fulfilled a number of roles at South over the years. And we appreciate the time, but before we let you go, we've got some quick questions. First thing that comes to mind, just feel free to blurt it out. A little bit more, you know, kind of personal, not work-related stuff. Outside of work, when you have a little free time, and not including golf, which we all know that you fondly think of and like to participate in, what do you like to do in your free time?
Well, we are blessed that we have, by the time this is out, we'll have our 7th grandchild, and my wife, who is much younger than I, has decided to retire as a school teacher, and we keep those, some of those babies. And I tell you, I'm a much better grandfather than I was a father, I can assure you. But I love taking care and going and watching my grandson play baseball and my granddaughter dance, and I take a lot of pleasure in that. I really do.
What would you consider your favorite athletic moment as an administrator at South Alabama?
The shot that rolled the tide. Absolutely.
What's the best athletic event you've ever attended as a fan?
I would say the Final Four in New Orleans. Not the year Joel and Urban and I were on staff for the Final Four a couple of times, but the year that the guy from North Carolina called the extra timeout that cost
1993. Chris Weber called the timeout.
Michigan. Yeah. The year Chris Weber called that timeout, I was at the Superdome watching that game, and that was a crazy night.
What one sporting event you've never been to is at the top of your bucket list?
The Masters.
You ever been to a Ryder Cup?
No.
But the Masters is ahead of it.
I've been to practice rounds of the Masters. We used to play in a tournament at Augusta, and we were able to take the teams that played in the Augusta tournament to the practice round on Monday of the Masters. But I've never seen the actual tournament play, and I'd love to go.
What's the best vacation you've ever taken?
My wife and I, for our 25th wedding anniversary, took a month, and we toured Europe.
What one place have you never been to do you want to go to?
Australia, New Zealand.
What's your favorite movie?
I would say Saving Private Ryan.
Favorite musical artist?
Earth, Wind, and Fire.
You might have to explain that to some of our student athletes when they listen. They probably have no idea what you're talking about.
They're the best. All they have to do is listen to their music, and they're the best.
Final question for you. When some director comes along, and we're going to assume it's going to happen shortly, and decides to make the Hal Williams story, what actor is he going to cast in the lead role?
Oh, my goodness. Wow, shucks. I don't know. Let's see. How about Harrison Ford?
Well done. Hal Williams, Associate Athletic Director for Facility Management, the guest this week on Inside Jag Nation. Hal, appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Brian, thank you.
Inside Jag Nation is a production of South Alabama Athletics. Any rebroadcast or distribution of this podcast without the express written consent of South Alabama Athletics is strictly prohibited. Remember, you can find a new episode of Inside Jag Nation every week on USAJaguars.com or have them automatically uploaded to your smartphone by subscribing for free on iTunes. Keep up to date with the Jags by following us on Twitter with @USAJaguarSports and @JagNationUSA. Thanks for listening, and go Jags! Wow!